There's an old saying, laws are like sausages, it's better not to see them being made. It's an old cliche to be sure, but there's something to be said about an important process that is sometimes unpleasant to watch. From the outside, voters are often perplexed by the legislative world. At times, they're left to speculate why some laws pass and some don't. Even lawmakers who are working on the inside can leave with less than satisfactory results. Certainly, party politics, competing interests, competing priorities play important roles. We see this in Washington all the time. But at the federal level, legislation moves at its own slow pace. In our state, with a part-time legislature and only 60 days to get work done, the process has its own rhythm and cadence at the start, but typically concludes with a frenetic ending. An ending that can leave you scratching your head and asking, what just happened? So, what's it like to work in the Florida legislature? How do members get their priorities and bills heard? How does a member's personal and professional backgrounds factor into the lawmaking process? On this podcast, we take a small peek into the Florida legislature by asking members to sit down for a brief conversation about who they are, where they're from, their priorities, and more importantly, what it means to be a lawmaker in our current environment. From Studio 67 in Tallahassee, I'm Eric Poole, and this is Capital Conversations. Everyone, welcome, and welcome to FACT's new podcast. It's Capital Conversations is what we're calling it. And really the goal of this podcast is to try to demystify the legislative process for not just the average citizen, but even for folks that work in the process, including members of the Florida Association of Counties. Often, you know, decisions are made that we have to speculate, well, why is the ball moving in this direction when we thought it was going to go in this direction? A lot of moving parts and pieces up there. And I thought there was no better way to try to pull back the curtain than to talk to some of the lawmakers that are in the process. And what we wanted to do, and we're doing, is to begin by talking to lawmakers who once served in local office as county commissioners. And so our first guest that we've had, and I'm very happy to have him, is Representative Thad Altman. Representative Altman, thank you for joining us.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
And so we got some questions, but what I'd like to do is if you could just tell us a little bit about where you're from, your hometown, your district, and your profession.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's appropriate to have local government working to demystify and pull back the curtain from state government because local governments have been doing that for a long time. You operate under the sunshine. You're full and transparent. It's the most transparent, open form of government on the planet. That's Florida local government. So I think that's a better way. And I hope we can do more of that too, to demystify and pull back the curtain because it does. I'm still working on doing that. It's a great goal. I'm from Brevard County, Florida. I grew up here. I've lived here almost my entire life since I've been a year old. I come from local government. My first elected office was the Brevard County Commission. I've been in the legislature now 18 years, so all in all, 25 years of public service. I work at the Kennedy Space Center. That's where I am right now. It's my day job, my real job. Most legislators do work another job. I tell people I'm very blessed. I have two dream jobs. I love being in public life, and I also love working out here at the Kennedy Space Center, my favorite place on the planet.
Representative, do I misremember? I thought at one point that you're in construction and contracting. Is that not? Do I recall wrong?
I grew up in construction. We had a family landscape business, but it migrated toward construction, and it's been a big part of my life. I'm a licensed building contractor. My license is inactive, but it is a part of who I am and what I've done. And I think, wow, that was great experience for getting into local government and specifically on the county commission, because I think that the 8 years I had as a county commissioner, arguably in public life, probably the 8 most meaningful years I ever had. I really believe in county government. It's the best form of government we have. The old adage, government closest to the people governs best. So I really, really wear that with a badge of honor, and I'm blessed to have had that experience.
Yeah, that's funny. You said 18 years, and I think you were probably one of the first members that I met because my previous legislative director, Carol Bracey, had introduced me to you, and she said you came from local government. I think we went mountain biking out with the Appalachian Forest, but that seems like a lifetime ago. But I think you understate your public service. I went back and looked on your bio, and I think you were first elected to the Brevard County Commission back in 1984. Am I correct in that?
I did. I was an intern in the legislature in 82. So that was my first session. And came back and ran for the county commission in 84. It was reelected in 88. I served two terms there.
So I want to try to figure out what makes a lawmaker tick, what kind of drives him. So first, what really drove you to public service to begin with? Because that's a tough job.
Well, what drove me was as a kid growing up in Brevard County, Florida, in O'Galley, Florida, West O'Galley, in the country, when I watched the what I call destruction of our natural beauty, of our community, uncontrolled development, uncontrolled growth, lack of preservation of very important environmental assets, and the things that I grew up enjoying playing in the woods and the wildlife, to see it just be completely wiped away was heartbreaking. So it was growth management and environmental preservation that really drove me into public service. And it still is the number one driver I have. We're facing some real challenges here in Florida, and we've had some successes. We've had some defeats, but that battle still goes on. We still have a chance, I think. And that local government was the place, that's the front line. And we achieved a lot of things in Brevard, but we have a long way to go.
So you left the Broward Commission, and then in 03, you were elected to the Florida House. So what motivated you to go from where, local politics, where really you're, the rubber meets the road, to something that you probably anticipated was going to be really hard to see the end results?
Well, it's tough. It's very tough for a local government official. I hope we get more come to the state level, because when you're on that local level, it's the immediacy of the job. You're firsthand. You have a smaller group, in our case, a 5-member commission. So if you could get 3 votes, all you had to do in our business, count to 3. Now you have to count to 61. Plus you have the challenges of partisanship. You got the challenges of cliques, and you have to work with different factions. So it's a different type of challenge. But many of the things that motivated me to go to state government were the same things that motivated me to go to local government: planning, quality of life, infrastructure. Of course, in our case, on the state level, that's even broader. You have a lot more health care issues. You have children and families and seniors. You've got education. It's a broad base of interest. But it was the same thing that motivated me. And I was an intern in 84. So my first experience in government was in state government, and I always had a dream of coming back.
So let me follow up on that, and it's a really generic question, and you're touching on it. So what's it like to work in the Florida legislature?
Oh, wow. Frustrating. The first word that comes to my mind is very frustrating. Our founding fathers really did a good job of, and I think any member, even the Senate president or the House speaker, would probably say the same thing. It's very difficult to make things happen. Our democracy was built on a basis that required people to work together, requires consensus. And it's very, very difficult. And so when you come from, like I did, a county commission where you had a 5-member board, to where you come up to this dynamic, it is difficult. So it can be frustrating. That's the first word. But it's a frustrating process. And frankly, I think it was designed to be that way. And maybe that's good, because our system's based on some very visionary founders that saw the negative effects of unbridled power.
So, I always say that, competing priorities, competing parties, that all play a big role in kind of how the sausage gets made there. But is there anything like procedurally, this is the second time you've been in the House. Is there anything like procedurally, because you've worked under, I think maybe three speakers, and I don't want you to call anyone out, but is there anything like you've seen from that perspective that makes your work a little bit easier or maybe more challenging?
I'm trying to, I've probably worked under six or eight presiding officers. I have to add them all up. There's been so many. What, anything in particular that makes it challenging? I think there's room for improvement in our system. And I have to tell you, the 18 sessions that I've been a part of, I have seen a progression of state government. It is getting better and better and better. I've seen great improvement. It's becoming a more member-friendly process. But the most frustrating is when you're in a system of 120 members, or in the Senate case of 40, when one person, one individual, can kill a piece of legislation or kill an appropriation or numerous pieces of legislation. And that's very frustrating because I don't think that was the way our founding fathers intended our government to work. And I've been a part. One of the things that keeps me coming back, I want to change that. I'd like to see a much broader, more participatory form of government. And I think ultimately we'll get there, but that's the most frustrating part. I'm frustrated not only when I don't get my way. I mean, if it's something that I may disagree with, it's still fundamentally wrong to have the few to prevent the majority from at least having a voice, at least having a vote, and the ability to kill legislation without even giving it a shot. That's very frustrating. I can remember, it took us 10 years to pass a child restraint law, a booster seat law. We were seeing four-year-old kids being maimed because they were in adult seat belts, and citizens just thought that was okay because it was legal. And that was a 10-year process. And for a number of years, the only way they killed that is they prevented it from being voted on because they knew that the public supported that. And for what reason, I don't know why they would oppose that. But that was a very difficult process. That's frustrating. That is very frustrating. And that shouldn't happen. Every issue that's worthy, and to me, what's worthy is if there's a number of members that feel that it is a public, we should at least be voting on these things. And I'll use a local government analogy. When I sit on the commission, it's that way everywhere in the state. Any member at any time can bring up an item to be voted on or to be considered, or if they want to do an ordinance, they can bring that to the meeting and bring it up. Doesn't mean they'll get their way, but there's nothing obscuring that voice or that vote. So we've come a long way in the legislature, and I think we'll go further, but you're seeing more and more of that openness.
All right. Well, let's talk about your priorities this year. You mentioned that you started in the whole process because you believe in the mm-hmm. environment and quality of life that comes along with that. Mm-hmm. So what about this year? What are your priorities and what are some of the bills that you're trying to get heard?
My first priority is I'm very honored Speaker Sprouse has given me the chairmanship of the Children and Families and Seniors Committee. Our leadership is very committed to addressing some very serious challenges that we have in children's services. And I really appreciate our speaker, and I'm looking forward to working with him. We've got some challenges on foster care and our local community programs that provide services to children and families. And you're going to see a lot of legislation that deals with that. So that's my number one priority. I mentioned my conservation background, but I have worked as a social worker in the field of social work and children's services. I've had a lot of experience there, and so that's another passion that I share, and this is going to be my top priority this session. I have a couple of environmental bills. I'm doing a bill in Florida Forever. It's been very frustrating for me to see how little we funded Florida Forever. We were really, my first 8 years in office, things were going great, but we've kind of slipped on that. And I'm doing a conservation easement bill. So still I'm very much involved in those issues. And then space. I live on the Space Coast. I work at the Space Center. We're looking at some space legislation. And been a big supporter of what we're trying to do to promote space in Florida and what Space Florida's worked hard to do, and want to be a part of that, which I have been since I've been in the legislature.
Can we segue into that? I mean, that's a personal interest of mine as well. And there seems to be, I mean, at one point, it almost looked like the Cape was just dead, you know, because of funding from the federal level. But with really initiatives from the private sector, you know, SpaceX and the others, and I get these, you know, I've signed up for all these email lists, there just seems to be launches left and right. And it really seems to be, boy, I don't want to say this cliche, taking off. But what is the trend that you're seeing in terms of not just the activity, but in terms of the spinoffs, in terms of technology, in terms of jobs, in terms of impacts to, you know, that whole region?
Well, it's been amazing. I grew up here in the Space Coast, and I experienced firsthand the excitement of the 60s and the Apollo program, the lunar launches and ultimate landings on the moon. And it was indescribable. And I never thought we'd ever see that again in my lifetime. We were hoping, well, we are seeing it. And it's even exceeding that level of excitement. You know, we had one program, the federal program, but now we have numerous programs. We have SpaceX. We have Blue Origin. Boeing is going to be launching humans to space here very, very soon. You have Virgin Galactic that will be launching tourists into space. We hope we get some of those launches here. And so this is amazing. You have Jeff Bezos, who has a vision of putting millions of people, not dozens, not hundreds, millions of people, and even moving heavy industry into space to protect the planet. These are amazing times. And we cannot begin to even express how exciting they are. Last year we tied a record for the number of orbital launches. We'll soon be breaking that record. It's a remarkable point in time. And what's interesting, being a state legislator is, and local governments and state governments are playing a larger and larger role in space exploration, where we're actually competing against each other, which is good. I'm a believer in competition. And I applaud those other states that are developing space programs and launch facilities, because we're going to need everybody to be involved if we're going to meet the dream of putting millions of people in space. And that's a lot of people, a lot of launches, a lot of launch sites. So this is an incredible point in time in history. It's like 1492 and being in Genoa during the days of early exploration. So this is an incredible point in time.
It's, and I want to be careful on how I say this. It's almost like our state doesn't brag enough about what's going on right now. It just, you know, you see it on CNN, you see, you know, you get an email. And I don't know if that's because it's a federal entity with, you know, some state support, but that's an amazing amount of innovation and technology occurring on our soil that, I don't know, I think it, you know, we need to brag about it.
Yeah, you know, we are becoming the innovation center of the world here in Florida. And I think it's only going to get better and grow more. We have some challenges as a state to meet those. And one is through our educational programs. You know, I tell people it's not hydrogen and oxygen or solid propellants that propel rockets into space. It's brain power. And we really need to do a better job of getting more young people into the STEM fields. And so we have some challenges from an educational point of view. That's probably our biggest challenge, to support the need that we have here. I know the speaker has some great ideas in terms of what we can do with education. So that's a real challenge we need to meet. The other, I think, I hear it over and over again from the commercial guys and NASA. And by the way, I didn't mention the NASA program is still incredibly exciting with their new rocket that they're building, the SLS system. So we got a great public and commercial science and space related endeavor, but infrastructure is probably our most immediate challenge. And that's also what gives us an edge over other states and other countries, is we have such a we have billions of dollars of infrastructure in place for launch, and some of that is aging. We need to update it, renew it, and expand it.
Well, let's kind of begin to wrap up, if that's okay, and we'll kind of pivot back to the mystery of the legislature. And I thought I'd let you maybe talk about, you know, for those who don't understand the legislature in the process, because after 18 years, I still don't get it all. And you said you still don't get it all. So what would you say to a constituent who doesn't understand why a certain piece of legislation passes, which we know it was fantastic, it's great, you know, and another doesn't pass?
Well, I think one thing to keep in consideration, the process moves a lot slower than, let's say, local government, even when you have need fewer people, and usually fewer special interests are at the table. That if something doesn't happen one year, don't give up. I've learned through my experience that the next session is right around the corner, and just don't give up. You know, keep fighting, because it takes time to build consensus. Also, there are a lot of special interests, and unfortunately, sometimes financial interest stumps public interest. And usually when things happen that are really stupid or you don't understand, it's usually because of somebody, it's usually a money issue, which is unfortunate. But that does play probably way too much of a role in our all levels of government. And it plays more and more role the higher up you get. And so, and you guys, we just have to overcome that. You got to encourage people to stay involved, to keep involved. I think the other thing to understand is very much of a leadership process, where you have 120 people and there's a process by which all those people are corralled and focused, and leadership plays a much bigger role than it does on a local level. And to kind of understand how to work through that. And you can, because the folks in leadership, they want to do the right thing too. But that's just yet another extra dynamic. And then you got this thing called bicameralism. You got to do it once, and then you got to turn right back around and do it again twice. You got to get both chambers to agree, something local government, nobody in local government has to deal with. And that can be difficult. And there's only one state in the union, Nebraska, has a unicameral legislature. The rest of us are in this bicameral system. Again, our founding fathers want to make it difficult, pass laws. And sometimes good ideas get held hostage because they start playing this game of chicken. One side has a priority that may be different than the other. And so that is extremely difficult as well. And then we got this thing called veto that the governor has. And so once you do it once and go to the other legislative body and do it twice, then you got to turn right around and do it a third time. And hopefully the government doesn't veto what you do, which happens a lot. Sometimes for bad reasons, but a lot of times for good reasons too. So it's the checks and balances that just takes time to navigate. It's a lot of work. And frankly, that's why we need people like you, Eric, to help guide the people that they're representing through the process. It's very important that we have organizations like the Florida Association of Counties, or the League of Cities, or the Lung Association, whatever it is. Need to have organizations and get together. It's been a tough time for local government. I think one of the most frustrating things for me is we've seen some things undone that local government has done so well. So we have a lot of work to do in terms of our form of intergovernmental cooperation and working together.
Well, let's hit the finishing tape. Let me ask you, been there, 18 years? What's probably the proudest moment that you've had serving in the Florida legislature, whether it was in the House the first time, the Senate, or today? I know there's many, but try to pick one. You can pick two.
Well, I was the sponsor in the House for the Everglades restoration legislation that was passed a few years back. That probably one of the biggest pieces of environmental legislation that we passed, And to be a part of that was very meaningful. Joe Negron really was the guy who pulled the weight and made that happen. And I'm so thankful that we had him where we had him, because I don't think there's anyone who could have achieved what he did. So that was obviously, for me, probably the most fulfilling moment. And I'm really thankful for Governor DeSantis, because I fully expected that legislation was so landmark and so controversial, so big. I sort of expected that we would probably have to continue to fight and maybe lose that legislation. But fortunately, we have a governor that's been really committed to protecting the Everglades. So that's really even made that victory even better. And then number two is my work with the military. I chair the Florida Military Support Task Force, which is the leading advocate for our military bases, our active duty military and their dependents. I grew up in a community that's very military. Most of our launches are at a Air Force station, although it's not named the Air Force station anymore. It's a Space Force station. So we have Patrick Space Force Base and Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. I have to think when I say that, because I said it differently for 60 years, you know. But I've been worked very hard with our military community, and been very involved in numerous pieces of legislation, and that's also been very fulfilling for me.
Well, and I would assume what's fulfilling now is your current position at the foundation. Do you want to talk and let people know what the foundation is and does?
Yes, I work at the Astronaut Memorial Foundation. It was formed right after the tragic Columbia accident, where so many millions of people saw it firsthand. Tens, if not hundreds of millions, saw that horrific explosion live on TV, many of which were kids, because it was the launch of the first civilian, a school teacher, Krista McCullough. And it really had an impact on an entire generation. And after that, the Florida legislature created the Challenger license tag, the first specialty tag ever, and generated money to build the memorial that honors our fallen astronauts. It's the memorial that Congress has designated as a memorial for astronauts. And we also have a Center for Space Education, which we call our Living Memorial, where we provide educational programs and events that are developed to inspire future generations to be a part of this endeavor of human space exploration. We have 7 acres and about 40,000 square foot building right here at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. And I encourage any of your listeners to call us if you want to come and see what we do here.
That's awesome. Great. Representative, thank you. I think based on our conversation and you being the first guest, that we'll probably hit the number one or number two spot on the Apple podcast in the next week or so.
Oh, good.
So, no, really, thanks for taking the time on a Friday to do this. Thanks for being patient with me. This being our first one, and I really enjoyed you coming on today. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good talking to you.
All right. Take care.